We're going to learn a Hasidic discourse that was written, actually, was not pronounced, by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, the previous Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, that's how we say in Yiddish. It's not a long discourse. I prepared a very short presentation to make it easier. But my idea is to read to you the text inside. I'm not going to read the Hebrew, because I assume you don't know the Hebrew. So I'm just going to read in English, online translation, so to speak, from the Hebrew into English. Maybe some words I'll actually mention in Hebrew, because they're meaningful, so to speak, to the understanding of what the Rebbe is sharing. It's really short. It's not so long. It's only three chapters, and each chapter is not really long. The original one, the real original discourse, is in Yiddish, because the Friedrich Rebbe, this Rebbe that we're seeing in the screen, he wrote short articles in a newspaper that came out in the United States, in New York, between 1941 and 1945, in the middle of the war, but in the United States, 1941, 1945. This newspaper, so to speak, this publication was called, it wasn't a daily newspaper, but this publication was called Akriya VeAkedusha, calling and sanctity, something like that. And there were all kinds of articles, everything in Yiddish, because the people in those times, in that place of the world, they spoke Yiddish. And the idea was to share Hasidic ideas, Jewish ideas, and so on. And the Friedrich Rebbe, again, wrote one discourse for each one of the coming outs of this particular newspaper. We're going to learn one that was written in 1944, Tavshin Dalet, 1944, for the time of Pesach. So it deals with an idea related to Pesach. Does it really talk about the whole thing of Pesach? No. No, we'll see in a minute. It starts talking about ideas connected to Pesach. But what we're going to learn is a very general concept on what is Pesach in our daily life, in our constant life. We can learn about Pesach when Pesach falls, like in the 15th of Nisan, and there's Pesach, and you have to do the Seder, a hoarder, and eat, and this, and that, etc., etc. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a teaching about Pesach, leaving Egypt. This whole process of leaving Egypt is not just a historical fact, historical idea, etc. It's rather an ongoing process, a constant ongoing process. So that's what we're going to learn in this particular discourse. It is not a complex discourse at all. It just has maybe two paragraphs that could be called complex. But that's my job. That's why I'm supposed to be over here sitting, teaching, to explain the difficult parts of it. So let's start. The presentation, of course, you can read. So I'm not going to read what's written over there. I assume you know how to read. But the presentation, the objective of the presentation is to follow a little bit what the text is going to share. So you will see at least parts of the text actually in the screen. But I thought it would be easier to follow the discourse, the Hasidic discourse, through having something to hold on to. Like, that's why I put some texts, very few things, in the screen. So let's start. The discourse is based on a teaching in the Talmud. The Talmud says that in every single generation, a person has to see himself, herself, of course, men and women are the same thing, as if you actually left Mitzrayim, Egypt. That's what the Talmud says. And actually, we do say this in the night of Pesach. And we actually basically fulfill this idea every single day. The idea of a generation, says the Rebbe. What does it mean, generation? Generally, when we say a generation, we're talking about time and also a situation. Every single Jew, man or woman, no difference of age, no difference of your standing in society, etc., has to see himself, herself, etc., as if you really left Mitzrayim, Egypt. That's what the verse says. That's what the idea says in the Talmud. We have to understand, says the Rebbe, what's the idea behind what's the intention that our sages actually told us? That every single person in the Jewish people has to see himself, herself, etc., as if you left Egypt. Like, wait a second, I was never in Egypt, so how can I see myself as if living in Egypt? I don't know what the roads are, I don't know what the paths are, I don't know, I wasn't there. I saw pictures, whatever, videos, I wasn't there. So what am I supposed to do, you know, the night of Pesach? And actually, we should do this every day, but the night of Pesach, I'm sitting in my table, I'm sitting with my family, and I have to see myself as if I left Egypt. Okay, I don't. I'm sorry. I wasn't there. So what's the point over here? What's the idea? If the idea is just that every single person should know and should feel inside that you really, you yourself, you left Egypt, after this particular idea, the Haggadah, which is the text we read in the night of Pesach, which is this small booklet, says not just our forefathers were redeemed by God from Egypt, but each one of us was redeemed by God. So, okay, we're saying the same thing twice. We're saying every single person has to see himself, herself, etc., as living in Egypt. Very nice. And then not just our forefathers were redeemed, but you also. You're saying the same thing twice. Why repeat? So if the Torah is repeating something, it's because actually it means something else. There are two messages over here. One message is God redeemed you from Egypt. And the other one, in every generation, etc. What does that mean? What's the whole point of in every generation you have to see yourself as if you left Mitzrayim, Egypt? Also, we have to understand, what's the definition of a generation? What does that mean? Up to now, we thought it only refers to time. Time. That generation, next generation, previous generation, etc., etc. That's a thing in the realm of quantity. Every single time, with no difference of when this is, then you have to see yourself as if you're living Egypt. But you should know that generation not only means time. Generation only means not just quantity of time, past, present, future, etc., rather quality. Generation means quality. What does that mean?
With no difference, what kind of person you are? If you're a very simple person, or you're a very learned person, tell me,
Chacham, you're really a wise and knowledgeable in Torah, etc., etc., you're the greatest genius of Torah, you should also see yourself as if you're living Egypt. Because this whole idea of a redemption of the exile in Egypt is not just a physical thing, a physical story, phenomenon that happened so many years ago. Rather, it's a spiritual, soulish, so to speak, pertaining to the soul, redemption. And this spiritual redemption of the exile in Egypt, it's always in the life of a person and in the behavior of a person, no matter what kind of person you are, and no matter what kind of time you live on, and no matter what kind of place you live on, you're still in Egypt. And we'll see later, just the fact that you're alive, that means you are in Egypt, and that means you have to leave your Egypt. We have to understand what's the Egypt, what's life, etc. Okay? This is what the Rebbe is going to talk about. And this is the whole point of in every single generation, a person has to see himself, herself, etc. Because every single neshama, every single soul that God sent into this material life with a body and a soul, etc., etc., that's already the exile of Egypt. We will see in a few minutes why we call this Egypt, Mitzrayim in Hebrew. We will see that. So again, every single one of us, because just the fact that we are alive, that means that we are a soul trapped in a body, trapped in this world, in the darkness of this world, in the difficulties of the world, in the challenges of the world, and so on. And the work of a person is the avoida. The work of a person is that you should redeem yourself from this Egypt that you live in. It's your job. It's your work. And even though it's not written over here, but I think it's an interesting addition, you should know that as soon as you left Egypt, the previous one, you are into a new one. And when you leave the New Egypt, hello, you enter a new one, and so on. This is just like, it's just an example, a person that is learning, let's suppose, medicine. So he goes to the first year of university and he finished and took a 10, 100, whatever, in every single exam. It's a genius of the first year of medicine. But you know what? When you finish the first year and you're a genius, you come into the second year and you're nothing. You're just starting. Yeah, but I took, you know, the exams. I was such a great sage in it. Yeah, but now it's a new year. Now you have to start from zero again and learn, etc., and move on. So as soon as you leave, that's just an example. As soon as you leave one Egypt, you should know that you entered a new Egypt that you also have to leave. And then you're going to enter a new one and so on your whole life. It's never going to finish. It's never going to end. Even though the redemption from Egypt was with the kindness of God, as the, again, Haggadah, the text we read in the night of Pesach says that God revealed himself, the King of all kings, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, etc., and He redeemed us. So it came from God, it came from above. He himself revealed himself and came down into Egypt and redeemed each one of us from the exile in Egypt. However, there was something that we did also. It's not just coming from above. It's not just God coming and redeeming us, etc. No. We did something. The Torah says that we actually screamed to God, to the God of our forefathers, etc., to save us. We were suffering so much that in Egypt, because of all the sufferings and difficulties and challenges, etc., etc., we started screaming. Vanitzak el Hashem elokei avoseinu. We screamed, we begged him, take us out of here. So even though the redemption came because God wanted, chesed chinam, so to speak, a free kindness of God, however, we did something to, I don't know if to say to deserve or to just at least put some input from ourselves, from below, and God heard our voice, and he knew, and he saw, our suffering, and then he redeemed us. But not always, and the Rebbe says this in a very, it's strong, this book in general, it's a strong book of discourses. We have to understand the context. The Rebbe was talking to the Jewish people in the United States in the 40s, late 40s, middle 40s, whatever, and people were actually living Torah mitzvahs, were living observance of Judaism, and it was really hard. It wasn't so easy. The news, so to speak, in the old land in Europe, that some rabbi was traveling to America, they used to say, forget it, he's lost. Even if he's a great sage, he's lost. America, you're lost. You can't be a religious Jew in America in the 40s. It's impossible. To the point that when the Friedrich Rebbe, this Rebbe we're learning this discourse from, he actually came down from the ship and stepped in the United States in the 40, in 1940, he actually declared in Yiddish, America is nicht anders. United States is not different. Just as we kept Torah mitzvahs in the old land, in Europe, we have to and we can keep Torah mitzvahs, commandments, whatever, in United States also. So having that in mind, the Rebbe is talking to this public, but it's a tough one. It's not an easy public. So the Rebbe is saying, up to here, well, we're in this part of the discourse, the Rebbe is saying, God redeemed us from Egypt. The redemption from Egypt is an ongoing process every single day of your life, as we're going to learn later. What exactly is this process? And you have to scream to God. But not always, moving on, not always, chas v'shalom, God forbid, Hashem hears. It's good. Not always is good. He hears, but not always is good. Not always has a result, this scream that we do to Hashem. Hashem hears our prayers always. Always does us. Every single time we pray, every single moment, etc. But not always God actually accepts the scream of the Jewish people and responds. Not always. Nope. Then in Egypt, God actually received the scream of the Jewish people and he saw our suffering, and he decided to redeem us. The same way, It's in avoda, in every single day, work with yourself, within your heart, etc. This spiritual redemption from the spiritual Egypt, you have to scream. You have to do something, and we will see at the end of the discourse what it means. But you have to do something about it. And then God is going to hear, and then he's going to redeem you. Whatever that means. The exile itself and the redemption itself, we have to still understand exactly what we're talking about. God always hears, but not always answers. And I would add, between parentheses, not in the discourse, God always answers, actually. The problem is that we don't like the answer. We are expecting some other answer, so he always answers. And he knows what's best for us. No question about it. But sometimes we think that other things are best for us. I want $1 million in my bank account. Yeah, I think this is the best for me now. Yeah, God knows better, definitely, because I don't have it. So definitely he knows much better than me. Even though I can ask every day, that's okay. You can ask, no problem with that. But it's not the point is not that God is not answering. He is answering me, but the way he knows is best for me. This is chapter number one. We said it's three chapters. The Friedrich Rebbe used to love summaries of things. So in these three, actually, they're short, but three short chapters, at the end of each one, there's a summary. So let's learn the summary also. We explained that a generation is not just a thing in quantity. When was this? The previous generation, the previous to previous? No. It's something in quality, so to speak. Quality of people. What does that mean, quality of people? Regardless of your spiritual level in which you find yourself, how much Torah you know, how much wisdom you know, or whatever you know, or whatever you do, etc., regardless of that, that's the generation in which you live. Like the generation of lawyers that talk about law and they have jokes about law, etc. The generation of it's doctors, they talk about medicine and they make jokes about medicine, etc. That's like the quote-unquote generation, so to speak. Regardless of which generation you find yourself, what kind of quality of person you are, that's a generation. And you have to know that you have to leave Egypt. You are found, you find yourself, you're found in Egypt, and you have to leave that. The greatest sages of Torah and the most simple people, everybody has an obligation of seeing yourself and feeling as if you actually were in Egypt and you left Egypt. And this redemption of Egypt comes through the fact that a person actually screams to God and says, I can't this anymore. I can't deal with this anymore. I stand this anymore. That was chapter number one. Let's go move on to chapter number two. All the holidays that Hashem, our God, gave us to the whole Jewish people, this is not just times. Like the seventh day of each week is Shabbos. And the first day of the month of Tishrei, that's Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year. And the 15th of Nisan, that's Pesach, and so on, all the holidays. It's not just times throughout the year. Don't make that mistake. Each holiday and each time in the Jewish calendar actually shows itself, expresses itself in the spiritual life of every single person, every single day of the year. There's a message that Pesach has. There's a message that Shabbos has. Just to give an example, before the example that I was going to explain regarding Pesach. Shabbos. Shabbos is the seventh day of the week. Very nice. It's just one day of the week. But you should know that every single day of the week, you should leave Shabbos. And basically, there are more. But basically, there are two explanations to this idea. Explanation number one, the Talmud actually brings this, and the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, actually quotes this from the Talmud, that when you get a good thing, suppose somebody gave you a good piece of food, or you saw and you bought some good piece of fish or whatever to eat, you should save it for Shabbos. The best you have to save it for Shabbos, and that's a way of leaving Shabbos every single day, because every single day you see these and say, oh, I'm going to save this for Shabbos. I'm going to do this, etc. That's like the regular Talmud law idea of living Shabbos every day. But then there's a Hasidic and deeper way of living Shabbos every day. That's tefillah, the prayer. Prayer is called the Shabbos of each day. just as Shabbos, it's a moment to connect to God, and I'm not going to go into the details of what Shabbos is and how it is, etc. That's another class. Just as Shabbos, it's a moment to reconnect to God, to recharge your batteries and so on. Tefillah, prayer, every single day, it's a moment to reconnect to God. Actually, the word tefillah means, teufel, means connection. Tefillah means connection to God. So it's the same idea. So every single day, you can leave, so to speak, Shabbos. You can leave this moment of connection. The same thing happens with every single moment, holiday, of the Jewish year. They actually express, as if it was an ongoing process, they express themselves every single day of your life. There are times when this holiday actually comes that you recharge batteries on the fact, on the idea of that particular holiday. And when a different holiday comes, you recharge batteries on the subject of that particular holiday. But then you have to express that subject throughout the whole year. The spiritual life of a Jew, they are life with truth. Their true life, so to speak, that God sent down here. A godly soul, in order to give life to a physical body, and to do actually our job, the kavana, the intention, the godly intention why we were created, when the whole world was created. The Torah brings at the beginning of the Torah, Bereishis bara Elokim, the first verse of the Torah, which I'm not going to translate right now, the whole thing, but in the beginning, etc., etc., the commentaries bring, Rashi brings, that the first word of the Torah already, it's syntactically not so precise. And that's why there are different explanations to this. Really, many, many explanations. The explanation that Rashi brings is that God created the whole world, so we should keep in the world Torah mitzvahs. We should fulfill our mission, so to speak, of Torah mitzvahs, which in turn, that means refinement of the whole world. But we will see in a few minutes. So again, the life of a Jew, what does it mean? It means that God sent a soul into a body and gave this soul a mission of refining and working with the body and working with the world around this body to connect it and reconnect it to God. The exile of Egypt and the redemption from Egypt, just as everything else, it's also an ongoing process. It's also something that happens in a spiritual sense, and has a work. We have to work with this. The descent, the general descent of the soul into the body, and the descent of the godly soul that gets invested in the intellectual soul, and in the natural soul, and in the animal soul. I'm not going to explain all these different names, because it's a whole thing by itself. The point is that there's a godly spark that descends into the body, with all the different parts, so to speak, of the soul, etc. That's what spiritually means the exile in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. What is Egypt? We can see over here, I wrote the Hebrew part. Whether you know the Hebrew, you don't get nervous. I wrote it also here in transliteration. Here, over here in Hebrew, says Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim means Egypt. That's the Hebrew word for Egypt, Mitzrayim. And the same word, when you start playing with the letters, you say metzar mi. Metzar means an oppression. Metzar mi means oppression, as we'll see in a second, just in a second. Oppression of me. Me literally means who. Me, who. But we will see what he's talking about in just a minute. So the word, the source, the shodish, the root of the word Mitzrayim is metzar. The root of the word Egypt is actually oppression. That's what the word means. That means limitations. So again, there's and now we're not just talking about Pesach. Again, we're talking about a very general ongoing process throughout your whole life. We left, so to speak, the 15th of Nisan, and we started talking about everyday life, everyday problems that everybody has. So in this idea that the godly soul descends into the body, and this godly soul descends into the natural soul and natural inside the body, so to speak. Again, there are different names. animal soul, natural soul, intellectual soul. I'm not going to talk about all the souls we have inside. They're just actually expressions of the soul. So it doesn't really matter how many we have right now inside. It's a whole class in itself. The point is that when the godly soul, the spark of godliness, descends into the body, it gets limited and oppressed by the body. Because before that, the godly soul had a very, very developed, so to speak, spiritual life, perceiving God, close to God, enjoying God, etc., etc. And now the soul is sent down. Actually, Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Father, says that we are born against our will, because the godly soul doesn't want to come down into the body. You know, you're by Hashem, by God, enjoying God, and now you have to go to the body. I don't want to go to this world, dark world. We don't see God, we don't understand God, etc., etc. So the godly soul gets actually compressed, oppressed by the body. And this oppression happens basically in the feelings, in the emotions that the godly soul actually feels, and in the understanding, the intellect part of the godly soul. And they really get oppressed, limited, so to speak, in comparison to what the godly soul had before it was sent into this physical body. And now the understanding of the godly soul became more coarse, so to speak, more worldly. Before, it had a more spiritual understanding of God. And now, understanding of things and feelings, everything became coarser, more ordinary, so to speak. But we should know that this descent of the soul into the body, which is the exile in Mitzrayim, it's for a purpose. And the purpose is redemption from Mitzrayim. The purpose of the descent is not to actually descend and remain down here. The purpose of the descent is actually to elevate yourself. So again, Egypt means oppression, Mitzrayim, Meitzar. And what is oppressed in the soul? What's oppressed is an understanding. The understanding of the soul gets coarser, gets more ordinary. The emotions, the love for God, the fear of God, etc., that the soul had when it was up there, whatever that means, in a spiritual way, it's way different down here. Because now you open your eyes and you don't see God. You open your eyes and there are so many exciting things far from God, just to say it in some way. So the Rebbe is saying, let's take this process of Egypt and Pesach and the Jewish people and the story, so to speak, and let's apply it to everyday life. You live in a limited way. The way you live, because God made this system, of course, the way you live is that you're constantly limited. What's limited within you? Your godly soul. Your understanding God. Your emotions towards God. That's a limited, that lives in a limited way, because you have a body, because you have a natural soul, whatever, animal soul, etc. Now, let's go a little bit deeper. Just a little bit deeper. And this is the only difficult part, so to speak, of this whole discourse. The Rebbe says that the word Mitzrayim, as we mentioned before, actually I'm going back, the word Mitzrayim, the sword, the shoidesh, the root of the word was Meitzar. Meitzar, just this word Meitzar, means oppression. And then we said, this is oppression of me. What is being oppressed? Me. And the regular translation of the word me is who. That's what it means in Hebrew. But now we're going to go into a very deeper understanding, a much, much more deeper understanding of what the word me means. Again, in regular translation means who. Okay, let's go. It's written, this is actually a verse in Isaiah. This is Isaiah chapter 40, in the verse 26, which is very interesting in itself. Isaiah says, lift up your eyes. Seum arem einechem, lift up your eyes. Ureu mivara eile, and see who created this. This means the world. Whatever you see when you lift up your eyes, the heavens and the stars and the sun and the moon and so on. This is what Isaiah actually says. You should actually contemplate. Basically, that's what the prophet is saying. You should contemplate around you, see the world, and you will understand you will come to the conclusion, intellectual conclusion, of the presence of God, of the wisdom of God, and so on. And there are books written about this. Actually, I recommend, really, really recommend, Duties of the Heart. It's in English, it's in whatever. Duties of the Heart, the second portal, it's divided into 10, I think, if I don't remember wrong. The second one is called Shara Bechina. It's a portal of contemplation of God, etc. I really recommend reading it. It's not so long. It's just 5-6 chapters, I don't remember exactly. Very interesting on understanding the kindness of God within creation, the wisdom of God within creation. Just with that information, you look around yourself and you say, hey, Se'um Are Menachem, you will lift up your eyes to the heavens, whatever, and you will automatically see who created this. Re'um Ibara Eile. Now, when you read this verse in Hebrew, I just translated the English one, but when you read it in Hebrew, comes up a word that should be already familiar to us. Re'u, see, in Hebrew is Re'u. Who is me? Oh, me, Bara, created Eile, these. Me. Wait a second. We just explained that Mitzrayim, Egypt, means Metzar, me. I'm going back a second just to see the words. Metzar, me. That's Mitzrayim, oppression. It's an oppression of me. What's the me? Oh, let's find another verse where we find the same word, me, referring to God, to godliness, to understanding godliness, to feeling godliness, that gets oppressed. That is oppressed. We have to understand in which way and what's the result of this oppression. But now we understand what is oppressed. That's why I wrote it in Hebrew over here and translated also. Me, Bara, Eile, the last three words of this verse. Lift your eyes, etc., etc. Re'u, see, me, Bara, Eile. Who created this? Now, the Rebbe is going to explain a whole, so to speak. It's a short thing, but it's actually, the explanation should be long. I'm not going to make it so long. I'll try to make it as short as possible. But the Rebbe explains what's me, Bara, Eile. These three words. Who created this? But we're going to completely change the meaning of this. Why? Because even though Ishaya was talking about meditation and understanding the godliness within creation, etc., as I explained before, we're taking this into a different place. We're taking this into your own avoida, your own work within yourself in understanding that you are in Mitzrayim, you are in Egypt, and you should come out of Egypt. So, we have to learn Torah. Now, let's try to understand.
we have to learn Torah. We have to learn Hasidus, like the inner part of the Torah. And then we're going to start understanding a little bit, at least, the creation of the world. This is what Yeshua is talking about. Lift up your eyes, etc.
That only God created of these from every single understanding and from every single meditation that we actually make. And meditation doesn't mean like Hindus do. No. We're talking about just contemplating the creation, contemplating anything you want. The greatness of God, the greatness of the Creator. By you actually spending time understanding these things, it will be automatically closer and clearer to you. If you don't make the exercise of actually thinking about God, God is not going to be a reality in your life. So yeah, you have to make it, it's your job to make it a reality in your life. By what? How do you do that? Thinking about Him. Meditate, spending time thinking about it as deep as you can. And the understanding of the godliness, the greatness, of Akash Baruch, of God, has to bring an excitement. It has to bring a result in the heart. So we're going from the mind, the understanding of the greatness of God has to actually have a result of emotions in your heart. Love towards God and fear towards God. A very strong love and a very strong feeling of awe, fear from Him. As it's written in a different place, it's in Mishlei, in Proverbs, according to the intellect, a man is praised. Man actually means emotions. As it's written, Ke'ish Givurosei, ish, a man, whatever, has strength. So man means emotions. Every single person, the excitement or the development of the emotions, love or fear, awe, etc., it's according to the way he understands. Because understanding creates, develops emotions. We start with the mind, and the mind understands things, and the better you understand something, the stronger is going to be the emotion towards that something. Sometimes the emotion is to get close, love, I want this thing. Sometimes the emotion is to get far, I hate this thing, it's bad for me, I don't want it, I reject it. But the stronger and the clearer you understand something, the stronger you're going to react toward this something of wanting it or rejecting it. If you don't get it, if you don't understand how bad something is to you, you're not going to reject it. You're going actually to take it because you don't get it. You don't understand how bad it is for you. So again, the verse says in Mishle, in Proverbs, Lefi sichlo yehul al ish. According to the intellect, a person is praised. That means, in other words, emotions follow intellect. According to the intellect, those are the emotions of a person. A small child wants cookies and candies and whatever. Why? Because he doesn't really understand how precious other things are, higher things are. That's why he gets crazy when you don't give him a candy. For an adult, you know, more candy, one less candy, whatever. I can't eat candy anymore, my teeth, you know, whatever. So you don't get so nervous because of a candy, but a child gets crazy. Why? Because the mind of a child is not so developed. Later it's going to get developed. Very nice. But right now, he's a child. So he gets nervous by a candy, etc. And so on. That's what it means. Now let's go back to the verse of Isaiah. Isaiah, which is written down up here. Lift up your eyes to above and see who created this. Mi bara eile. Me, this word that, again, I'm going back on purpose. We said, oops, over here. It's related to something getting oppressed. Me, which means godliness, what you can understand of godliness, your understanding, it's oppressed. This word, me, means understanding. In Hebrew, if you don't know the subjects, and if you don't know, don't worry, it's called bina. Bina means understanding. Okay, if you learned Kabbalah, Hasidus, whatever, that's what it's called, bina. Understanding. This me, which is understanding, bara, created, eile, these. What is these? Emotional attributes. It's just the same thing we just explained before, but the Rebbe put it into the verse. Who created these? Who refers to intellect? And these refers to emotions. So intellect created emotions. This is exactly the same thing we just mentioned before. Again, just expressed in the words of the verse. That's all. Emotions are the desires of the heart, and they are usually the result of meditation, of deepening, deep understanding that creates actually emotions. This is the end of chapter 2. We will understand why these refers to emotions in a second. But first, as I mentioned before, the previous Rebbe loved summaries. So let's summarize chapter 2. Kitzur, summary. We explained that all the holidays and all the times of the year, they express in the life of a Jewish person in a spiritual way, every single day. The descent of the soul into the body, and the fact that the soul is invested in, there's a godly soul invested in the normal human intellect, that's already called Mitzrayim. That's already called oppression, Egypt, so to speak. Because the understandings and the feelings that the godly soul has becomes limited, very limited, in comparison to what they were before it was inside the body. The emotions are the result of understanding. Chapter 3. This is what it means. Okay. This is what it means, actually. The last part of the verse of Isaiah, me who Bara created this, Eile. Why is Eile related to emotional attributes? This is interestingly connected to Pesach and Sefiras Omer, the counting of the Omer. I'm not going to explain the whole thing of the counting of the Omer, but we know it's, the Torah says in Parshas Emor, you have to count 7 weeks, seven times, 49 days, 49 times. And we know, the Kabbalah talks about this, mysticism, Hasidus, whatever, we know there are seven emotional attributes that I'm not going to explain all of them now, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, Malchus, whatever. Whatever they mean, it doesn't matter, believe me, that's what they are. Now, when you take the word Eile in Hebrew, it's written over here, Eile, and you look at it a little bit deeper, you will find something interesting. Eile means Aleph, it's three letters, Aleph, Lamed, Hey. Aleph, each letter in the Hebrew alphabet actually corresponds to a number. Aleph means one, Lamed is 30, and Hey is 6. So when you add up Aleph, Lamed, Hey, you have 36. And 36 is 6 times 6. So we have 6, I mentioned 7, but the 7th is a different idea, Malchus, whatever, it's a different point. When you have 6 emotions, each one of them comprised of 6 components of the other 6 emotions, then you have 6 times 6 is 36. That's how we find that Eile, these in English, in the verse of Isaiah, refers to emotions. So again, we have me, bara Eile. Me refers to intellect, understanding. Just when a person wants to understand something, he starts asking, ma, me, what, who, how, etc. So that's what it means. Intellect has all kinds of questions. This intellect created, that's what me represents, who, God, create, intellect created these emotions. Because each emotion, for instance, chesed, kindness of God, etc., up to the 6th emotion, which is called Yesod, fundament, is actually comprised of 6 components of the other emotions. Chesed shebechesed, gevura shebechesed. I'm not going to go through the whole 36 combinations, but you have 6 times 6, you have 36. That's what the word Eile actually means. These actually means. Now, the mother, quote unquote, of these emotions, it's called Bina. Bina means understanding. Just as we explained before, that understanding gives room, gives life, develops emotions. But that's what it means. Mi bara Eile. Who created this? Intellect gives life, creates, develops, etc. Emotions. These emotions. Eile. Now, again, what does it have to do with Mitzrayim and all the things that we were talking about? Now the Rebbe is going to start putting everything into place, so to speak, and we will understand in a different and deeper way what Pesach means in everyday life. Let's see. Again, the word Eile, these in Hebrew, in English, means emotions. Because each emotion is the, as I mentioned before, result of intellect, of understanding. So we can understand that each emotion has its own idea, own understanding. The ideas that give life to love might be different than the ideas that give life to fear or awe, etc. Regarding the two emotions of love and fear, for instance, there's an understanding of godliness that is separated from other understandings that gives room and life and develops, etc., love for God. And there's an idea, completely different idea, separated, that gives life, room, etc., develops fear, awe. Because fear and awe, love and awe have two different qualities, are completely different attributes, etc. That's why they need, so to speak, a different idea to give them life. The quality, the characteristics of love is closeness, because a person that loves gets close to that thing which he loves, or that person which he loves. Like parents, they get closer to their children. This arises within the child a very deep feeling, to the point that the child gives his life to the parents, because he feels the love that the parents have for him. In the same way, a student and a teacher that is teaching this student Torah, or good qualities, good behaviors, good emotions, etc., the fact that the student gets closer and gives himself to the teacher is because he understands the value, so to speak, of the teacher, and he starts loving the teacher because he feels the love of the teacher when he teaches him. When we meditate on the fact that God gives life to every single thing, this is a verse in Nehemiah, God, you give life to every single thing. According to this idea, just as God gives life to every single creature, and the Jewish people is called Am Kroivoy, a people close to God in the Tehillim, in the Psalms, God chose the Jewish people. And when you start thinking about this in a deep way, meditating about this, contemplating on this, this deep idea, how it brings and it expresses the greatness of God, it develops within yourself a very strong love towards God. And you give yourself to learn Torah and to keep the commandments, the mitzvahs, with enthusiasm, with feeling, etc. That's about love. Again, when you feel when you understand that God gives life to everything, and He chose you, and He's giving you life, and He gave you Torah, etc., so you want to get closer to God, because you feel closeness to Him. But fear, it's a completely different feeling. It's a feeling of rejection, so to speak, farness. For instance, the fear and the awe that a person has when you see somebody very learned, very wise, such a sage, etc., that has such good qualities, etc., or when you see somebody like a king, for instance, you start feeling awe and fear, and you just go back to yourself. Like you become closed within yourself, because you realize how big this king is. And the bigger the king is, the more important the king is, the more fear you will feel towards this king. In the same way, when a person meditates in the greatness of God, the amazing, incredible greatness of God, and a greatness that has no measure, that because every single thing that God created has no comparison and is nothing, really nothingness in front of God. It's just a creation. Its value, so to speak, in front of God is almost like nothing. This meditation arises in the person a feeling of awe. That is a very strong feeling of fear. And you feel that you are nothing, and you feel, so to speak, that you don't have strength to get closer to God. You feel very low, and you feel your spirit is very small, so to speak, in front of God, that fills the whole earth, and is all-powerful, and is everywhere, etc. This brings a person to learn Torah and to fulfill practical commandments, mitzvahs, in a way of accepting the yoke of heaven. It's not so the Rebbe explained basically these two feelings of love and fear. Fear brings you closer to God. When you feel that God chose you, that God gave you Torah, that God teaches you, God gives you the whole creation for you to use and get close to Him, so you want to get close to Him. Or the other way around, when you feel the greatness of God and how low you are, that doesn't bring you close to God. That generates a feeling of nothingness. I am nothing in front of God. So But the Rebbe explained two different concepts generate two different feelings within the person. And this is what it means, the exile in Egypt. When? Now we're going to understand why we said before,
I'm going back, Meitzar Mi. Mitzrayim, Egypt. In Hebrew, Mitzrayim means Meitzar Mi.
An oppression of who? What is who? What is who? Who is who created this? Means intellect. Now, we just explained that there are certain ideas that arouse in a person feelings. But there's a problem. What's the problem? Golus Mitzrayim, exile in Egypt, the oppression of the ideas. What does that mean, the oppression of ideas? When a person, even though he actually learns Torah and understands godliness, for instance, thinks deeply as deep as he can, thinks about the fact that God gives life to every single thing. Or you think about in a deep way how God feels, the glory of God feels the whole world, and you understand it properly, very well, and still you don't get excited. This is the oppression of me, of who, so to speak. This is the oppression. This is the Egypt, quote unquote, that a person lives in. It's not that you don't learn. It's not that you don't understand. You're not a fool. You get it. The rabbi taught you pretty well, but you still don't feel anything. It doesn't excite you, so to speak. It doesn't arouse within yourself no fear and no love. That's what it means. You're living Egypt. That's a meitzar. That's an oppression of your own understanding. Even if you understand, it still doesn't create anything. In other words, the Rebbe doesn't say this, but I'm just adding in order to add a little bit more of explanation. We have the head. Within the head, we have the brain. The brain thinks and understands. And then we have the heart. And the heart feels. But you know what? Between the head and the heart is the neck. And if you pay attention, the neck is like smaller than the head and the heart. And the rest of the body where the heart is. Why? Because that's the oppression that prevents, so to speak, the ideas from the head to go and influence and change the feelings of the heart. So we have a Meitzar Mi. We have an oppression of who? What's this? Who? The understanding you have of godliness. As I wrote over here, even if a person contemplates, still there's no result. You don't feel anything. It's a problem. So what do you have to do? What did the Jewish people do in Egypt? The Jewish people in Egypt, we screamed to God, the God of our forefathers. Oh, the same thing we have to do right now. You have to scream to God, but this scream has to be in the service of the heart. That means tefillah. That means prayer. In the Talmud, the Gemara says clearly that avoda shebalev, what's the only work that is within the heart and with the heart, that's tefillah, that's the prayer. You have to scream to God in prayer, ask him, let me feel you. Now I understand it. If a person doesn't learn and doesn't understand, okay, I got it, go learn. It's your problem, so to speak. But if you learn and you understand and you still don't feel, you have a problem. You live in Egypt. You have to leave this Egypt. How do you leave the Egypt? Scream to God. Ask him for help. Pray to him. Show yourself to me. That doesn't mean you're going to see a white light over here. It usually doesn't happen. No. You're going to feel it within your heart. Then God is going to see your efforts. God is going to see your suffering. That you have a very poor, so to speak, poor understanding and poor feeling of God. And God is going to see all the suffering you have and all the problems and challenges you have, etc., in service of God, doing your service with accepting the yoke of heaven, the King of the kings, etc., and just doing what you have to do. God is going to see how difficult it is for you. Then is going to come the redemption from Egypt, Geulas Mitzrayim. when you scream to God and you ask him, I want to serve you with happiness. I want to serve you with excitement. I want to serve you with enthusiasm. I'm going to do whatever I have to do, even if I don't feel it, even if I don't understand it, but I would like to feel it. I would like to understand it. I would like to enjoy it. You have to ask God for this. You have to scream to him, not just asking. Scream to him, like our forefathers did in Egypt. And then God is going to redeem you from your own Egypt, and you will be able to fulfill Torah mitzvahs, the commandments, etc., with a feeling, very inner feeling of spiritual, so to speak, spiritual feeling, and with happiness. This is chapter number 3. Let's go to the summary. We explained that the word eile, that we saw before, the word eile refers to emotions. And these emotions are created by me. Who created this? Me, bara eile. This me, this intellect, in the world of Kabbalah, whatever it's called, Bina, this intellect and understanding creates emotions. Every single emotion has a specific intellect, idea, different idea that creates that particular emotion. Love and fear are completely different. The quality of love, the attributes of love, is to get close and to fulfill Torah mitzvahs with enthusiasm. The qualities of fear are farness. You go far, you get far, and you fulfill Torah mitzvahs, accepting the yoke of heaven, because God said so, and that's it. And through you screaming to God, you will be able to have Geulas Mitzrayim, the redemption from Egypt. And in the words of the Maimar, you will be, of the Hasidic discourse, you will be able to actually keep Torah mitzvahs in a very inner spiritual way and with happiness.